hasn't been represented or anything. Aren't we running into the same old problem again?
Well, we're assuming that the defendant is being represented. It's not likely that you'd have a situation where the defendant weren't represented.
What would the court do in that case when he ordered this psychiatrist? Would he then notify the defendant and his counsel that they have the right to be present?
Oh, sure.
Of course, the immunities would be available.
Well, you'd order that the examination be made, and probably, normally, you would, if you're thinking at all seriously of the enhancement, you'd require him to be confined for 30 days while the examination is being.
Where, supposing that there was nothing came in at the trial with respect to the, his having in his own name or under his control substantial income or financial resources not explained and so forth, could that information, I don't think, that could be obtained in a pre-sentence. And what kind of a hearing would you contemplate? The trial's over.
An enhanced penalty hearing.
Sure, just like you have now for aggravation or mitigation. The same kind of hearing.
Shouldn't we say so?
Well, we should set up a procedure for the hearing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Some time upon receipt of the psychiatric examination and pre-sentence reports, the court shall set a time for a pre-sentence hearing, unless the DA and the defendant waive it. And at the pre-sentence hearing, they may examine the psychiatrist.
But what right do they have to examine him with respect to his holdings or income or anything at that time?
Yeah. They don't under those, you're right, because that comes within subsection 1 or 2.
Yeah.
And under subsection 3, I've allowed for a hearing, for a pre-sentence hearing, but I haven't required it.
Under 3?
Yeah, for the
3-7.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading.
Well, that refers only to 3. It has nothing to do with psychiatric examination.
That's right. That's
he
just your special crime.
It takes the 5th, then, on his source of income and so forth. You got a peculiar situation there. He hasn't explained it. But could the court take advantage of that fact because he has exercised his right to the 5th? I doubt it.
The court has to make a fight.
No,
the court couldn't.
Constitution.
You
can't let a jury do it.
I don't think he could take advantage of it if he asserts his right to it, which I think clearly he's never right.
If the court finds that he has it and he hasn't explained it.
Not explained to the satisfaction of the court.
So the court finds that he has it because they subpoena his bank account.
Like
he takes
the
fifth, so he has to explain it. Like Pot says, every time you find 3 or 4 criminal law revision members, you always find a 5th.
Well, that's kind of a ticklish area.
Let's flag it. It's quite a topic.
I can come back to what I think about 5 minutes.
Yes, 5 minute break. That's the best idea we've had yet. Figure it out.
Listen, my motion would be incidental drafting changes necessary to on section 7.
Sure.
And that up by not having to refer to paragraphs 1 and 2, just refer to section 6.
All in favor?
Aye.
Carried.
All right. Now, by eliminating 7, which related to 3, we still preserve the right for a pre-sentence hearing, at which there's confrontation and cross-examination with respect to the severe personality disorder, right?
And that's required.
Now, do we also permit the defendant the right of cross-examination and the right to put on evidence insofar as the sufficiency of the prior convictions are concerned as they relate under sub 2 of 6? felony done under a presumption criminal act, that's about what the enhanced penalty proceeding is a hearing on the sufficiency of these prior convictions. Now, is that implicit in here? If you don't, if it would seem not to be, because you say they may examine the psychiatrist. Follow me?
Mm-hmm.
You got to add something there to give the defendant the right to
move the non-good.
In order to meet the test that's been set down. You gotta provide procedures for that. I'll have it. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I think,
where do you think that should go?
Well, I think it should be, I think perhaps I don't know whether additional language in the last sentence of sub 5
that's right
will do it, but in any event you're going to need a section here similar to ORS 168080, which sets out what will constitute prima facie evidence of former convictions, and what, you know, and define former convictions, like one within 7 years. Follow me? Now, you haven't done that, though. You agree it should be done?
I'd like to think about that for a moment to confer with my counsel.
What do you want to do again, John?
What I'm saying is, if we're going to have this pre-sentence hearing, which is in effect an enhanced penalty hearing, then in addition to being able to examine the psychiatrist, The defendant's counsel should be able to examine the sufficiency of the prior convictions as are contemplated under sub 2 of our dangerous offense.
Why don't you just make a DDI motion then?
Jim is not doing the case under our...
Well, he can do that now.
Well, I know he can, but we're appealing Chapter 168 in its entirety. Replacing it by sections 6 and 7 of this, and we've kicked out what the standard in the statute here, providing what is prima facie evidence of a former conviction. You follow me, Tim?
Well, I think it should be in here.
Well, it has to be if we're going to have, say, two less of Don.
In our cases under the Habitual Offenders Act, the felony has to be as defined in Oregon, felony committed elsewhere.
Well, some that constitutes a felony under the conduct that constitutes a felony under Oregon law, isn't it?
Well, I just wondered,
the way it's presently Oregon.
It just says felony.
Well, that's what I mean presently. Well, is it? It's either black or white. I don't remember which.
Well, it's not that easy. A felony is a former conviction in this state or in the United States or in another state of an offense which at the time of conviction of the offense was punishable by death or by imprisonment in penitentiary.
Which number are you reading?
168015, and which offense also would, at the time of conviction of the principal offense, have been a felony if committed in this state.
That's the part.
What about a crime that was a felony under the prior law, was no longer a felony under this new code?
like that.
If the word felony then, I think it's just kind of like the divorce law, valid where contracted.
Well, certainly we should have that in here. Don, do you think that you could crank that and whomp it right into this?
Can you whomp it in, Don?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
There's one of the areas now where they're so reluctant to bring the habitual is that you knock out all the ones where the guy wasn't represented by counsel at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's some suggestion in the cases that if he pleaded guilty, and his plea was invalid under Boykin versus Alabama, that he can't count those either, because what they do is, to use the phrase, they crank in these new constitutional doctrines into those old convictions and invalidate them.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a body of case law to go.
Of course, ours is not dependent upon number. All he'd have to do is find the one that fits the category.
Find the one valid prior felony
that matches either one or two.
But we're going to have to find what a valid prior felony is.
But what we should do, I think, is just use the
1-5.
Yeah,
1-5.
Yeah,
well, I'll make that motion with the caveat that Don is to do it.
there are a lot of caveats here today. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carried. Another caveat carried.
I always wonder what caveat means. I don't mean what Don does.
It's sort of a fish that comes from the sturgeon. Hey.
Now, can you have this done by Friday?
Let the draft.
Yeah, all
well, that's it. That winds up my part of the program.
I'm fine.
Now, Sir Donald, you can
guide us into the
paths of
righteousness. Mr. Chairman, I want the record to show that I reserve the right at the full commission hearing to have a go at you again on section 4.
Fine. Let the record show that Judge Burns wishes, possibly may wish to vacillate.
Well, what I'm going to do is
implementing what our grading and sentencing procedures. It was an arbitrary decision on my part not to put it in, and when are you going to decide it?
Yeah.
Well, you see, I had assumed that since we sent these books out a year ago, that everybody had read those, and that if there was anything in there that I didn't put in that the ABA wanted, that you would bring it up.
That's quite an assumption.
And I set out in here some of the sections from the other states, so you can have an idea of what some of their provisions are.
What are we going to do about it? It seems to me that we have a real opportunity to exercise some initiative here. When we get into the area of multiple offenses, consecutive sentences, and disposition of offenders owing out of state time.
No, I guess it's not that way.
I don't think that we can sit here today and probably do it. I'd like to see a comparison drafts and have the side of something.
Either one or three.
LDI.
Or is it LDDI?
Yeah,
well, FYPD. You know what that means, though?
F-Y-P-E-P. Last word is buddy.
I
suspect it. But I just want to make sure.
That's the only word he knows, yeah. So.
Well, what would be the status of our law if we did nothing now with respect?
Would that disturb anything?
No. That's what I don't think it would, because they would still be in effect.
The present statute says that you can make them either consecutive or concurrent.
And that's where it would remain.
Right. It's also, we have a case that says that you can't make sentences concurrent where they're served in different institutions, for example, between OSP and the Loudoun County Jail. By case law. That type of problem is a relatively...
Right, but then we end the situation where murder is separate, right? Mm-hmm. Murder is in there. You can't make it consecutive.
Sure you can. Statute.
Well, I forgot to... Well, we've got an opinion on this question of...
Yeah, but that's an attorney general's thing.
Yeah, that really was related to parole, actually.
Well, Don, you're talking about some of the things that we haven't covered. They have procedural aspects to them. And if we don't do anything with them now, we're not disturbing anything, so why don't we leave them alone?
Well, that was my thinking, but I wanted you to be aware of the fact I left them out.
Well, you left the impression that you were sneaking, holding something back.
Why do you want to
hold something back?
Well, you kept saying, but, and I haven't told you everything. Let's get the classification.
The only thing that's worse than a sneak is a sneak with a conscience.
Yeah.
That's why, yeah, I try to be candid and open above board, and what I get.
Yeah, you're even redundant when you're explaining your...
Honesty may be the best policy, Don, but premiums are pretty high.
Where is that statute on consecutive?
Now, how do we start on this classification?
Well, I have a list.
Starting with theft.
Yeah. The,
are we going to be privy to your list?
It's fantastic.
Why don't we get a dartboard?
It's fantastic.
What do you
think
about it?
Let's do that. We'll throw the dart.
Oh, no. Let's use the University of the law school. Let's use the law school grading facts, the University of Oregon. We'll put a separate one of those stairs and throw them down. Those are all at the bottom or class A.
Yes.
I move that what we've done thus far today and yesterday go directly to the printer without going through the commission.
Oh, no, I don't entertain that motion. That'd be horrible.
After that vote of confidence during the last 10 hours of work,
yeah, that's right. Thanks for the appeal.
We've got to have another crack of indeterminate sentences. No, I think I'll go along with you on it. All right, Don, pardon me.
Well, now, it seemed to me there were several ways of going about this. Now, we can go through it section by section, that is, our proposed code, and make some, at least some preliminary decisions with respect to each crime that's in there as to how you want to classify it. Or we could follow the Michigan code and go through that, and I have a list of the Michigan grading system, and of all, which is the closest to our code as far as the degrees of crimes and whatnot, and attempt to make some preliminary decisions. Or the third alternative would be for you to make some broad decisions as to what kind of crimes you want in each category, and then I can prepare a classification system and submit it back to you.
Well, explain that last. What did you have in mind, the last alternative?
Well, for example, if you wanted to make a policy determination that any felony that involved the use of a dangerous or deadly weapon or serious physical injury or the threat and that sort of thing should be a Class A felony. Your second degree offenses should be a Class B felony and all others should be...
How do you want to proceed?
I think that we're in a position...
Go item by item.
...to go right through them and make a decision to Don and then have to fuss around them.
Why don't you start that way?
We start through and see how it goes.
Yeah.
If Senator Burns or someone else impedes the progress unduly, then we can switch...
Judge, what, is that your jogging shirt or your napping shirt? I'm intrigued by the number.
It looks like he did both.
Oh, you're terrible. Well, Donald, we can't hold this group together much longer. You're going to have it.
Come up with something.
Okay, well now supposing I just start through our we brought one set of these because otherwise we'd had 40,000 books to bring over here. So I got one set of all of our drafts.
How many?
Well, that may be a slight exaggeration.
I told you a million times, don't exaggerate.
Okay, well, under our specific crimes, the first article we have is criminal homicide. And the offenses involving danger to the person.
What's the first?
The first one is murder.
Here's, I think, we're George. Murder? No, we decided that murder would be in a class by itself, or be life.
I move that we put it in the statute as punishable by any term of sentence not to exceed the natural life.
I still want my unanimous consent.
Yeah, all right.
All right, Don.
All right.
Next one in homicide.
Okay.
You don't have a list of them, huh?
Well, I have a... I don't have a list of all of ours. For the simple reason that it hasn't been possible to keep up with the list as we've gone through our drafts, because our drafts... We've got so many different drafts going on in different places at different stages of completion.
Well, what I want to know is how many times will you have to shuffle through that book to get to each additional one, see, so that we can act on it?
Quite a few.
We can come back for 15 minutes.
Why don't you take this preliminary report and in the beginning of it and go through the ones that are printed in it, just page by page, and we pass on them up through...
Well, I don't think it takes too long.
All right, let's
go
ahead
and just go this way.
Go ahead and crank through it.
Quit moving around, let's go.
Quit being impatient, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Sorry.
Okay, and then under criminal homicide, the next section is manslaughter. Manslaughter under Michigan is graded as a B felony.
Any objection to B?
This is 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
This is recklessness.
Or a homicide that is committed under the influence of extreme mental or emotional disturbance for which there is a reasonable explanation and excuse.
C would be fine.
No, it should be B.
Or intentionally causing or aiding another to commit suicide.
Fine agreement,
Chairman. B is fine.
I'd like to see it in C.
Did you decide on murder?
B, murder of life.
For punishment, indeterminate sentence like Johnson?
Yeah.
No, but could you help him turn the page?
We're in second silence.
Hey,
we're the files
Don,
are
doing the second volume. Don, I'm doing the second volume, and I'll start your margin for you.
Sure.
Negligent homicide.
Criminally negligent.
No, it doesn't.
It's got to be black secret.
Thank
Could you move a little to the left? I'm sure he's going to be leaving us in a minute.
Oh, I'm going to get some paper, please.
Senior
from
the school, quiet.
Here. Manslaughter is a B, right?
One of those sheets.
Yeah. And negligent homicide is C, right? Now, are those the only three? Classifications in our homicide draft.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Well, manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide. All right. That's a C felony under Michigan.
All right.
C.
And Don, would it help you if, as you go through, I carry a list down and just mark them down?
Yeah.
Would it help you, Don, if I turn the pages?
criminally negligent homicide is C.
Manslaughter is
C. Okay, what's your name? Oh, okay.
What's next?
Well, we haven't come to it yet.
All right. The next one is assault and related offenses. Assault in the third degree.
What the hell is that? I missed it.
Are we reversed the Michigan sequence, didn't we, Don?
Yeah, third degree is our lowest.
Oh, well.
Third degree is our lowest.
Oh, no, that's right. No, we didn't. We just listed them.
We start with third degree.
Start with third.
Start with
yeah,
first.
That's right. But we follow the same classification. Assault in third degree. That's just plain common garden variety assault, isn't it?
With a Class A misdemeanor?
Class A misdemeanor under Michigan law.
I so move.
All right, and then assault in the second degree. Okay. And you want me to read the definition?
Yeah,
I want
to. Yes, that's exactly. Read the definition. Right.
Intentionally or knowingly causes serious physical injury to another, or intentionally or knowingly causes physical injury to another by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon, or recklessly causes serious physical injury to another by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon.
Michigan? C felony.
C felony okay?
Second.
Unless you have something to say.
Well, now we're talking about serious.
Yeah.
We're talking about physical injury and intentional physical injury. We're talking about the use of a deadly or dangerous weapon. Now, do you think. C's enough?
The penal code goes 1 degree higher on the extreme danger than the aggravation. Makes it a second degree felony. But it's not the same.
What is the, first degree? What's the distinction between first and second degree under our?
Well, you see, now we have kind of a hybrid first degree.
Yeah.
Because we went to intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly causes serious physical injury to another under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life. That's our first degree.
Second degree is what?
Intentional or knowingly causes serious physical injury, or intentionally or knowingly causes physical injury to another by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon, or recklessly causes serious physical injury by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon.
I guess the first question is whether first degree assault ought to be an A or a B felony.
Now, it's a little hard to equate ours with these others because we departed from
what they did. First degree is what again? It also includes reckless?
We added this circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life.
Would that be roughly the equivalent of assault with intent to kill? Could you equate that? Because under our present Oregon statute, other than assault with intent to kill, which carries life, the other assaults are limited to 10 years. Assault with a dangerous weapon, assault with a dangerous weapon, and assault with great bodily force is 5 years presently. I would assume that we wouldn't want to increase.
I think I'd say C and B. I would say
B felony for first degree and C felony for second degree.
10 and 5.
Menacing. A person commits the crime of menacing if by word or conduct he intentionally attempts to place another person in fear of imminent serious physical injury.
That's equivalent to our threatening to commit a felony, right?
That's a new one though, really, isn't it?
It's a Class B misdemeanor.
161,
yeah,
is that
down? Yeah, this is by word or conduct intentionally attempts to place another person in fear of imminent serious physical injury.
That's presently an indictable misdemeanor, threatening or advocating the commission of a felony.
How about a Class A misdemeanor?
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a civil assault.
Read it again.
A person commits the crime of menacing if by word or conduct he intentionally attempts to place another person in fear of imminent serious physical injury.
It's an inchoate crime, right?
Sure.
Well, sure. What? Well, it's a crime. It's in the nature of an inchoate crime. Because a crime constitutes the words or conduct placing in fear.
Do we have that in degree, Doug?
No, it's just one section. Now,
Class A misdemeanor. That's what I think.
What did you get this Class A misdemeanor?
Up to a year.
Year 60, 30. No, year 6 months, 30.
Right. And what's the fine on A misdemeanor?
$1,000.
$1,000.
I remember something about what was menacing all about? What were we trying to do? I remember something peculiar about that one. We spent more time.
Well, it's halfway between third degree assault and reckless endangerment.
Yeah, but were we trying to? Why did we try to pick up the? The vial of.
We say that
cyanide.
The proposed draft recognizes as do most modern codes, if placing or attempting to place another in fear is a type of conduct warranting criminal sanction. The menacing section is based on two premises, that an intent to cause apprehension of injury is a culpable mens rea, and that an intent to injure is more serious than an intent to cause apprehension of injury. As drafted, this section is a compromise between codes which equate an attempted battery with a tortious assault, and those codes which recognize no crime unless the actor intended to inflict battery. As an example, X with intent to frighten Y points a gun at Y, which Y thinks is loaded, but which in fact is not loaded. Under the model penal code, such conduct would constitute a simple assault. Under the proposed draft and the New York and Michigan code, such conduct would constitute lesser crime of menacing.
Class A.
Class A.
But a lesser crime, menacing is a lesser crime, right? Then simple assault. Where are we going to put simple assault?
Class A misdemeanor. Well, third degree assault.
All right. Then this is if we're going to keep that, it's going to be lesser. You're going to be in class B then.
But our assault now, of course, is changed. Our assault requires injury to the person.
All right. Are we going to put what I'm trying to get at? If we keep that this is lesser than assault, that was one of the reasons we put it in here. If we put assault where? Class C felony.
Well, you're going to put, you're going to make assault in second degree a C felony and first degree a B felony.
Okay, then that's then a Class A misdemeanor. I just didn't want to get to
third degree assault is a Class A misdemeanor.
Well, that's all right. I just didn't want the menacing to, we have menacing to be a lesser crime than assault and wind up having a more severe penalty.
Menacing is a halfway house.
Well, are we going to make it an A misdemeanor and make it the same as a third
degree assault?
Yeah. Okay. General, move automatically, move each one of these up a notch.
Two notches, I'm
there. All right, then the last section in assault is recklessly endangering another person. If he recklessly engages in conduct which creates a substantial risk of serious physical injury to another person.
Class B.
Say that again, I'm sure.
Recklessly engages in conduct which creates a substantial risk of serious physical injury to another person.
Like, for example.
Okay. Acts without any specific intent to injure or kill, recklessly shoots into a crowd. If death results, the crime is murder. If injury results, the crime is assault. And if neither death nor injury results, the crime is recklessly endangering another person.
Can't be more than a C.
Felony, maybe A, misdemeanor.
It's a misdemeanor. Yeah. In the model penal.
I'd say an A.
I'd say a Michigan is a class A misdemeanor.
It seems more serious than menacing, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we've got.
Hey, we're only talking about 6 months difference.
First degree assault is a B felony. Second degree assault is a C felony. Third degree assault, menacing, and reckless endangerment are all aimless to be.
Right.
Yeah, this isn't so bad, is it?
That isn't too bad. Lee, do you want to move down here so you can hear his reading of this?
Can't you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear
you. Can you read?
Yeah, the problem is I'm trying to concentrate on two things at once.
Oh, all right.
He's setting up the pages so Don can go through and find them a little easier.
You see, now this is why a list wouldn't work. Because if you go through a list, it doesn't tell you what the substance of the crime is.
You're doing fine. Don't feel bad, Don. We're with you.
Nobody thanked me. I
like
it.
We love you, Don. Attaboy. Let's do it again.
Trying
to
make sensitive.
How about time for our leader to become sensitive?
All right. Kidnapping and related offenses. Section 1, we'd skip definitions. Kidnapping and
that was unnecessary.
Definitions, A, Mr. Wheeler.
Okay, kidnapping in the second degree. With intent to interfere substantially with another's personal liberty, and without consent or legal authority, he takes the person from one place to another, or secretly confines the person in a place where he is not likely to be found. That's second degree kidnapping.
What's first? How many degrees do we have, Don? Just two?
Yeah, we have 2 degrees of kidnapping.
Uh-huh. And then do we have a custodial interference?
Yeah, 2 degrees of that, too.
What's Michigan, Jim?
Well, the
class...
Michigan is Class B felony, but you see their wording is somewhat different. They say second degree kidnapping if he intentionally abducts another person. And then first degree if he intentionally abducts with intent to hold for ransom and otherwise.
This should be a felony, shouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'd say Class C.
Well, I
didn't hear what the first degree was.
That was
when they go on to first.
Yeah, that's where I was looking at.
All right, first is if you violate Section 2 for with any of the following purposes: to compel any person to pay or deliver money or property as ransom, or to hold the victim as a shield or hostage, or to cause physical injury to the victim, or to terrorize the victim or another person.
Class A.
I think it should be an A.
C and A.
Yeah.
Well, now Michigan has second as a B felony.
Yeah, but it's different. It's a few new definitions.
What is our second degree of
use? Well, we classify A and B felony. It doesn't go down to the C category, although of course it doesn't quite fit on. But it views this as a first degree felony unless the kidnapper releases the person voluntarily prior to trial. So it does take a very serious view. It's second down to second degree felony, which would be our B.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, first, our second degree, you have an intent to interfere substantially with his liberty without consent or legal authority. You take the person from one place to another or secretly confines the person. And then we have a defense built into that, too. I don't know if you hear that.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
That's a person taken or confined has not reached his 16th birthday. The defendant is a relative of that person, and his sole purpose is to assume control of that person.
C and A.
I say A and B.
I think
kidnapping first degree A felony, kidnapping second degree B felony.
I'm inclined to think so.
I'll yield.
We're not leaving anything for Chandler to do, though.
Well, they're still lying.
Oh, okay. All right.
I yield, but I disagree.
There's only one of their first degree felony in the model.
I think that's right.
So we've happened to hit the first two of the model penal code. It's the only one that uses it. It's most severe.
Well, that's the first A felony.
Didn't we kick out fraud and insolvency too? We're not there yet.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to see if it's
felony.
What else is there besides after second? Is it the imprisonment?
Custodial. We didn't keep a false imprisonment.
We just went to custodial interference.
We went to custodial interference in the second degree. Knowing or having reason to know, he has no legal right to do so. He takes, entices, or keeps a person from his lawful custodian with intent to hold him permanently or for a protracted period. That's second degree. Then first degree, he does the same thing and causes the person to be removed from the state or exposes the person to a substantial risk of illness or physical injury.
Well, I think... I think first half should be a Class C felony to provide a vehicle for extradition if you're removed from the state. Because if you're removed from the state and the defendant also goes beyond the state, you make it a misdemeanor, the authorities have no extradition process available.
Well, that was the reason we did that. At the time of the drafting, we brought this through subcommittee. The idea was to have a felony there that you could use without charging some guy with kidnapping.
First degree should be B, probably.
In other words, if it's a child stealing kind of situation, that call it child stealing rather than kidnapping.
Well, second degree though is where it doesn't take them out of the state.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be satisfied if first was a C felony and give the judge to provide it a felony for extradition purposes and then let the judge give him a misdemeanor sentence if necessary.
Yeah, if you have a C felony and an A misdemeanor.
Right, that's what I would
think.
Oh my gosh, you're smart.
He's just trying to spread around a little bit.
You gotta concentrate on your
sentence. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when this package hits the Judiciary Committee, I want you to emphasize to the Gus Solons on that committee how much care we took for this process. Differentiating.
That's right.
It took literally hours of work.
4 years in the process.
Maybe
you ought to
cut the tape.
Where's
your
next? No, the last comment ought to be. Certainly, no question. That's when you're all dark, Mr. Green.
Right.
Uniformly?
Uniformly, depending upon the dollar value.
You mean,
and the only one that would be an exception there would be extortion.
Well, yeah, we have extortion and there's physical injury or threat of physical injury involved. Don't you want it to carry a heavier penalty?
Well, it wouldn't do any harm if it did. It's set out in a separate section and it's done. Yeah,
I think what Don is saying, I'm not sure I'll add anything clearly. What Don is saying is that now in Oregon, the district attorney will file a charge that X did on such and such a date commit the crime of theft. That's all he has to allege.
Well, and then the amount.
We're making that now irrelevant, I suppose. But that's all he has to allege. He then goes to trial, and if he proves theft by any of these means, the crime of theft is proved.
Is that the way that's set up?
Well, but that isn't the way you alleged the indictment. You certainly alleged the means of the indictment.
That's all right. If he alleges the means of the indictment incorrectly, and if the trial proves that theft occurred by some other means, he's still home free.
Otherwise, you're back to the same old thing here. We're trying to get away from. Now, one thing that we did not include in the theft article that I've talked to Don about is a very important section. On the procedural aspect, I can't remember which one.
And we've talked about
consolidation of theft offenses, sub 1 of 223.1. And that's necessary to this thing if you're going to accomplish what you really want to accomplish. And that means that clarifies, Jim, what I'm talking about. Well, it's relevant here, I think.
Well, how would the indictment read under this, your proposal? On the 21st day of March, Defendant Carson stole $280.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll go see my wife's
arrived. From so-and-so.
John Burns.
Period. Mary and Jeff.
Committed the crime of theft by stealing so-and-so from so-and-so.
I think the only exception was for extortion. I think they drew a distinction there. That otherwise, the DA would just generally allege that
an accusation of theft may be supported by evidence that it was committed in any manner that would be theft under this article, notwithstanding the specification of a different manner in the indictment or information. That's what I meant, Jim, when I said that even if the DA does get wordy and say he committed theft by saying that he conned a woman out of money by doing such and such, and then actually proves that he didn't con her that way, he con her another way, it doesn't make any difference. As known as he shows the crime of theft,
you got some due process questions there.
Oh, I see. Could you give me room to do
well? No, I don't think so. You're entitled to be notified of the charges against him. If you say that you committed deceiving the victim,
I think you would have a problem.
You define the crime as theft. Did on such and such a date commit the crime of theft?
Our proposed draft says theft by extortion.
This procedural consolidation section, just recently. And that, right in the teeth of the old law about mixing your metaphor. Our court, in recent decisions, in two or three recent cases, has ignored the distinctions and the failure in the indictment to allege the proper crime. In other words, the DA has come in and alleged larceny, and the facts have shown embezzlement, and the court has said, we don't care. We're going to look through the 18th century distinctions, and we'll find you guilty as charged, although the comments are different. I don't think it's a legal process.
Well, now, this is a matter we discussed at great length in Subcommittee 1 way back at the beginning. And originally we had a proposed section for this procedural kind of thing. And the Subcommittee tossed it out. And I frankly can't recall offhand why they did. I was thinking I had it patterned after Michigan, but I must have been New York, which allowed just a general allegation subject to the discretion of the court.
Guilty of theft, that's the charge. You stole something. Now, we're not interested in how he stole it. Did he steal something by any of these means under the charge?
How the hell is he going to defend?
Who knows he's going to have to defend against the general collective charge of stealing something? He's no longer going to be imposed upon by these old common law distinctions and having to prove exactly how he stole it.
What is the point be this way? You have to give him sufficient information what he did. He did on such and such a day steal a cow. Okay, that's enough. The problem would be that he wouldn't have to cut the cloth to fit the heifer statute or the steer statute. Because
those aren't the distinctions you're talking about, though. He wouldn't have to cut it to fit embezzlement, false pretense, or larceny.
Yeah. Well, but here, he can commit theft by receiving stolen property, knowing that it's stolen and so forth. He can commit theft by deceiving someone, OMFP and so on. He can commit theft by just plain taking, or he can commit theft by extorting it. You mean to tell me that all you got to do is allege that on the 24th day of May, the defendant
theft
That's not as funny as it sounds, really.
Theft
and other things we're trying to
accomplish.
$280
on rolling cars.
It's susceptible to the objection in 132.5.10 that it's there's not sufficient certainty.
Well, now here's how New York ends. Where there's an element of the crime charge, the property was taken from the person or obtained by extortion, an indictment for larceny must so specify. In all other cases, an indictment information or complaint for larceny is sufficient if it alleges that the defendant stole property of the nature or value required for the commission of the crime charge without designating the particular way or manner in which property was stolen or the particular theory of larceny involved. Proof that the defendant engaged in any conduct constituting larceny as defined in section such and such is sufficient to support any indictment, information, or complaint for larceny other than one charging larceny by extortion. An indictment charging larceny by extortion must be supported by proof establishing larceny by extortion. So they did draw a distinction there, but in all other cases, they would allow just a general
argument. Because the penalty was different, John? Is there a different penalty for extortion?
Well,
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I think it was just because of the manner in which the crime was committed. But I think it's a good point, and I don't know, because they have a basic section on larceny, and they say that you commit larceny by doing all of these things, acquiring lost property, issuing a bad check, false promise, by extortion.
But Don, we don't do that.
Well,
we define theft, we say what theft is, and then we have separate sections on theft in this manner, theft in another manner, and theft by extortion.
Well, I do that, but it still comes to the same thing. If, in fact, we crank in this necessary provision, I believe, with respect to the same thing as New York does and the same thing that the Mount Penal Code has to relate all the separate breakdowns.
You know the way I do it, if you look at Section 2 on, well, if you look at your theft drafts, Don, Section 3, theft of lost, mislaid property, I'd make
make a subsection one, what you have, and then I put subsection two. This is a class. This is a class B misdemeanor.
No, seems to me that's exactly what we don't want to do.
And then you go to theft by extortion. You can put a new section in there, subsection, say this is a class B felony.
Well, that continuing is, the difference is contrary, I think, to the basic purpose of the theft grant.
You don't want to recognize any difference between theft by extortion and theft by deception?
No, I don't myself. I'm not saying you couldn't, under even the system that I think you created and that you really wanted to create and that you should create. Perhaps you could make a different penalty, but I'd rather that I would not see it.
How would you do it
at all?
Well,
I'm not sure how you'd do it.
I see a defect in the way we drafted Section 2 of that.
Well?
But lead us out of the wilderness, Don.
Well, all we've done, we say, first of all, that if he under sub 1 takes...
It's a class C felony if it's over $250.
Yeah.
And then theft by deception, theft by receiving, and theft by extortion, all are class C felonies, right?
Mm-hmm. The only possible difference in there, which we talked about way at the beginning of this project in subcommittee, was trying to draw a distinction under your theft by receiving for the professional type fence, and we decided not to try to do it.
Well, then your acquisition or theft of lost or mislaid property could be a class C felony if it was over $250.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy that happens to stumble on a diamond ring and keeps it, a passive act, would be placed into the same...
No, it's not passive, John, because you cranked in an intentional aspect of this crime. If he comes to find out later who that ring belongs to and then decides to keep it himself, it's not passive anymore. And I think it's just the same thing as theft by deception.
Right.
And I fall in the same...
I think Don's right.
I would buy that, except I still think we should have an increase for extortion.
Well, I agree.
Won't that be picked up, though, with endangering the life of the person?
Well, if there's...
So we don't get a first time...
No,
we'll
reconsider.
If you really, you know, if you've got some injury to the person, you're going to pick it up under some other crime.
Or perhaps a robbery type. It's very close.
And we've got coercion, too. Coercion's, the language is almost identical to theft by extortion, except here you obtain property as a result.
All right, how about B for extortion, C for all those with a value above $250, and Class A misdemeanor for $250 or below?
That's all by that.
Don, do you have any violent objection to that?
Objects to the treating the extortion.
Well, I would... It could be done, couldn't it?
Doesn't hurt anything.
Yeah, we can...
You don't have to call it theft by extortion. I think I'd write the element on it. You get the
guy that's feeding drug habit now, and he's a five-time loser, and he goes into Fred Meyer's and steals $190 chase recorder rather than let the DA take him on a information for felony and treat him as a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. But I think that's all right. I think that's right.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried.
The first case I tried in the DA's office was against a guy that was accused, was a four-time loser, and he stole a 98-cent screwdriver from Sears, and they charged him with larceny. And Bill Langley just beat me over and got a defendant's verdict, and he should have.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest, sir, that John will back this up, that the next commission meeting ought to take up the additional section, again, the aspect of linking the new procedural aspects of theft, which is not now existent in the theft grant, the New York type section that he just read and the one that I just read from the Model Penal Code, I think it's crucial to the understanding and operation of the section.
Yeah, I think it should be in there.
I think that's what you meant to do, clearly. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gone to all this, the trouble that you did and the format and the language that you did. And yet, if you drop that stitch, I'm afraid the whole thing is going to unravel.
Don, would you, that would be much of a job to prepare that.
No, I had a section drafted at the very beginning of, on our first theft argument.
I think we need it.
Now, without belaboring the point, can I just all, I understand that you do want to draw a distinction on theft by extortion, make that a B felony?
B felony, yeah.
And that would be the only one that would be treated differently?
Yeah.
Right. And everything else would be a C felony?
Uh-huh.
Or an A misdemeanor, depending on the dollar value?
Right.
Okay.
I'm sure you'll invite the charge later by somebody, and it's not a number.